Coming up on Path to Zero.
It can't be all one thing and not something else. We've got to balance out the needs of climate and economics and reliability and security.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Path to Zero. This time, we're focusing on how an important industry is navigating the energy transition to tackle the environmental challenges we face. Our guest is Joel Moxley, the CEO of GPA Midstream Association, which represents dozens of companies that play a vital role in moving energy products from production areas to markets across the country. GPA is launching a major public education initiative called Let's Clear the Air. The goal of this campaign is for the midstream industry to have an open dialogue on the evolving future of energy and then to create solutions that build a thriving future for everyone. Joel, it is great to talk to you and welcome to Path to Zero.
Nice to see you this morning, Tucker. Thank you.
You know, Joel, we really want to talk today about the Let's Clear the Air campaign, but really for our listeners who probably aren't familiar, talk to us about what exactly the midstream industry is and then the role it plays in delivering energy. I think most of our listeners won't really understand midstream.
Well, like the name suggests, midstream is the middle between the upstream sector that drills wells to produce oil and natural gas and the downstream sector that turns crude oil and natural gas liquids into products like gasoline and plastics that are used by consumers. Midstream really is the infrastructure of pipelines and storage and trucks and rail cars and that connects supplies with markets here in the U.S. and in some cases around the world.
So it's a vital part of the industry. And as you would say, it's kind of, I like to talk about the vital middle sometimes.
Yeah.
You've been, the industry has been together. How long? How long have you been formally in industry?
Well, and in the name midstream, I would say we probably became an industry with that term in the 1990s. The assets have been around. My trade association has been around for 100 years. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, the things we've been doing have been around for over 100 years now. We're in our 101st year right now.
And so you have existed for 100 years, and now this is the association's first campaign around public education and, to a degree, advocacy using the digital space. What is so different about the environment today versus the previous 100 years that creates the need for you to have a public advocacy campaign?
Well, we, we had a philosophy, I think, as an organization, or at least a set of assets for many years. We were part of large integrated oil companies. So back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, our assets were part of integrated oil companies that produced oil and natural gas, and then we had the assets that then gathered and processed and transported. And as the industry deregulated, the natural gas industry deregulated in the 1990s. So we were kind of hidden in other industries for a long time. But then I would say in the last 20 years, if not maybe a little sooner than that, we've become a lot more visible. We've become a industry in and of ourselves. We have some very large companies that are, you know, billion plus dollars of market cap. And we are just a vital part of the energy infrastructure here in the US. So we're just a lot more visible. And then from an environmental standpoint, people have figured out that if you can stop pipelines from being built, then you can stop production of oil and natural gas from being drilled. So we've become a lot more visible as an industry over the last decade or so.
You know, so much about this campaign. Well, tell us a little bit about this campaign. Tell us kind of the key components of what you're trying to educate the public around.
Well, we just want to tell, it's an effort to tell our midstream industry story. So Let's Clear the Air is just an effort to tell a story about the midstream industry. We want people to understand the role that the midstream infrastructure plays in making the U.S. economy go. We wouldn't be able to do this podcast today without midstream companies moving energy around to power our country. Of course, you know, we want to acknowledge that it's important to address climate issues too. So that's a part of Let's Clear the Air. Energy and climate are intertwined in today's narratives as we all try to do our part. So hence, that's why we came up with the name Let's Clear the Air. It's our goal to talk about climate, to make our air cleaner, and talk about the misconceptions about the current sources of energy, many of which travel through our assets to through our midstream facilities. We'd also like to be a place for industry people to come and ask questions, provide well thought out answers. Energy and climate are hugely complex subjects that don't really fit into 15 second sound bites. So it's a big challenge to come up with answers that don't rely on a bunch of numbers and technical jargon, but we're going to give it a try.
Yeah, for me, one of the things that I always think about in your industry is, you know, the network of pipelines that crisscross this country that really, you know, were the result of clear thinking from all leadership about how to deliver an energy secure future. You know, going back to World War I and World War II, as people thought about what we needed to do. And now today, I feel like those pipelines are so under attack. Well, what do you say to just a normal citizen when they are, you know, questioning you about the value of pipelines?
Well, it's the safest way to move products by far. So if you're consuming natural gas to heat your home, or you're using gasoline to run your car, it's still the most effective way. It's the most economical way to move products that we that impact our daily lives. So from that standpoint, it's safety and it's economics. You know, they're really everywhere. I mean, if you can take a map of the U.S. and overlay the natural gas pipeline systems and the refined products pipeline systems, you see that they're almost like the arteries that move the energy around our country. And without it, the country really doesn't go.
I know for me, I find there's no study nationally or even worldwide that suggests consumption is waning. In fact, consumption is growing. And I find advocates against pipelines never really think about, if you had no pipeline, the only real alternative would be by truck, correct? Or rail, I guess truck and rail, yes. Which are, as you correctly say, one, I don't think they're as safe. Two, they're not as visually appealing, right? I mean, there are trucks on the road, railroads on there. Pipelines are not only the safest. And then lastly, for me, the investment has been made, right? The only investment in a pipeline now is to see that it's adequately maintained, which is easily done today using modern engineering. I find, you know, particularly, and I know we'll talk about it over and over, but the debate around line five up in the middle part of the country is such an interesting debate to me, in that, you know, the advocates for removing line five were like, just replace that volume with trucks and rail. Right. And that is not easily done by any means.
Hundreds a day, hundreds, if not thousands of trucks per day, depending on the time of year it would take.
Which require hundreds of truck drivers,
right.
Hundreds of rail crew, hundreds of more terminals to receive said trucks. And so the net to that would be probably decreased reliability, increased cost, increased pollution, from trucks and rail. There is not one benefit to it.
No, other than, you know, a political angle and a political victory of stopping something that people are opposing.
Let me ask you one other question. As we think about, I find the narrative around clean electricity, and everyone agree that if we're going to move to a world of renewables, renewables generally are going to be where people don't live. So we still have to have a method of transporting electricity from where it's made to where it's used. So what do you say to people who are against furthering underground pipelines that bring clean, low carbon fuels like natural gas or propane, but they advocate for overhead pipelines, which they call power lines, to bring electricity? How do you rationalize that to someone who's studying that?
Well, I think if you ask somebody who's a landowner what they'd rather have running behind their homes, for the most part, they'd rather have a buried pipeline than a high voltage electricity line running behind their homes. Just from a disruptive, from a visual standpoint, and what it does for your lifestyle. So I think the safety of pipelines is really proven, and as you know, the safety of high voltage pipe of electric lines are too. But it's just from a visual standpoint, I think you'd much rather have a pipeline across your property. So I think what we see is opposition to just anything new from an infrastructure standpoint. I think the people that are fighting pipelines, for the most part, are going to fight high voltage power lines as well. And just, you know, there's just an opposition to infrastructure.
So a lot of people will be scratching their head about how natural gas fits into clean energy. How do you respond?
Well, natural gas is really already helping us to a cleaner energy future. You know, we've seen a 30% decrease in greenhouse gas emissions between 2000 and 2019 as a result of increased natural gas use to produce electricity as it has displaced coal. So, and natural gas in the form of LNG is making its way from the US to places around the world to meet energy needs and meet climate goals there as well. So natural gas is a part of a cleaner energy future.
We talk a lot about renewable natural gas. Does renewable natural gas flow in those same pipelines that bring natural gas?
Yes, it's the same methane product. It's just a matter of a different source. And so the volume of renewable natural gas is obviously much, much lower than natural gas that comes from conventional sources. But sure, it burns the same, it moves the same, it has the same properties. So it's interchangeable with conventional natural gas.
All right, I wasn't going to use the M word, but since you broke it open, let's go to methane. So even for climate scientists who can work around the fact that natural gas has a great carbon intensity and probably has the benefit, certainly over coal or oil, and when we bring in energy security, particularly domestic security, energy independence, it is arguably the most perfect fuel for our future with one little problem. Right? Methane is reactive as a greenhouse gas. What is the industry doing to eliminate the leaks around unburned natural gas?
Well, you know, we realize that that's something we have to address. I mean, we get paid to move product. We don't get paid to leak it. And so we are spending a lot of effort, a lot of work is being done to reduce the amount of methane leaks. I think the toughest thing to figure out is how much it really is. I mean, there's not a lot of established science yet on how to measure methane from midstream sources. I think we've seen a lot of efforts on actually measuring methane from production sources, and there are a lot of work being done on that. There's certification programs being done on that. But for methane for midstream, where we have hundreds, thousands of miles of gathering lines that are low pressure, through compression stations, through processing plants, through transmission pipelines that are thousands of miles long, I think the amount of methane that we're releasing is rather small, but what we don't have are ways to reliably measure that yet. There's a lot of work being done on it from satellites and drones, and a lot of technology is being deployed to try to figure out how to quantify methane leaks. But I think the industry is very committed to reducing it because, one, it's the right thing to do, and two, there's an economic incentive to do as well.
Joel, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll continue right after this.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people, with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane, energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win if I
zero. Welcome back. Today we're talking pipelines with our guest Joel Moxley, the CEO of GPA Midstream. And as we're thinking about your campaign and kind of how you wanted to address it, there's certainly been, I know for you, a study towards data, maybe even technologies. Are there any new technologies or measurement tools that midstream companies are using to help really support their business around climate goals?
Yeah, there is. I think there's a lot of work, but it's very, very early. There are companies been set up to do this. And so there's a huge amount of research being done. You know, DARPA got into this more than a decade ago with a bunch of research. And so there's a lot of different technologies being tried. You know, there's a environmental non-government group going to put up a methane detection satellite sometime next year. That will fly the U.S. Weekly, looking for methane leaks. And so I think there's a lot of technology being deployed, but it's a matter of how effective it's going to be, how precise it is in finding it, because, you know, if you're off, 100 yards, you may be finding somebody else's leak and not your own. And so we're working on that. I think, again, a lot of our companies are committed to that. They're participating in research. We're doing some work like that at GPA Midstream as well. We just kicked off a new greenhouse gas emissions and abatement committee, trying to find best practices, trying to share information so that we can, get everybody in our industry more aware of what the technology opportunities are.
And methane not only comes from natural gas, of course, but methane comes from naturally decomposing material. So, I mean, it's really difficult to measure the changes in methane concentrations in the climate and then determine which is responsible for that. Methane is methane, right?
Yeah, I mean, agriculture actually is the largest methane producer in the U.S. right now.
Right. Mainly so from not cows.
Do in the oil and gas industry and the energy industry is not significant, but the largest one is actually the agricultural industry right now.
Joel, I really study greenwashing, and I've kind of been studying it ever since an article appeared in The Guardian about 3 years ago that really talked about anything we say as an industry or anything you say is certainly greenwashing. I always found that very offensive, in that, you know, it was as though only people who have a differing view than us could in fact be telling the truth. How do you come out and tell a campaign, talk about a campaign, but have it feel genuine and not something that a cynic would say, well, that's just the oil and gas industry greenwashing, preserving their heritage.
Yeah, it's a great question, Tucker. You know, we almost feel like we're guilty until we can prove ourselves innocent anymore. That seems to be the narrative that we have, is that everything we do is self-serving. I tend to think that's a bad rap that we have, but nonetheless, we just have to be more open. I think that's really the key to me, is just you have to be willing to talk about things, try to talk to people in a non-jargon, in a common language, and just try to put a human face on things that says, you know, we're here with you. We live in the same communities. We're part of the same groups that everyone else is. We want our families to be living in a clean environment. We want to be in do the same positive things that everybody else does. And so I think that's part of the whole Let's Clear the Air campaign, is to try to be more transparent and to be open and to address things to the extent we can. So I think there's a whole host of things, and this is just a step. I mean, we're a huge industry, and I'm not talking about just midstream. I'm talking about the whole U.S. energy infrastructure, and we're a small part of that. But I think that we need to be more transparent. We've done some work at GPA Midstream. We produced a ESG reporting template for midstream companies. We just put out our second iteration of that. We did that in conjunction with another trade group. And, you know, again, it's all about transparency. We just want to say we don't have anything to hide. We want to be as open as we can to tell our story, that we're here to be part of the solutions for the future.
So the last question I'm going to ask you is something that I've only ever seen one writer talk about it, a University of Houston scientist who talks about the direct use of natural gas and the indirect use by making electricity. No study that I have seen shows a decline in the use of natural gas over the next decades. It's that natural gas, and even in the environmentalist world, would probably be moved from being used directly, i.e. heat my house, heat my water, cook my food, to being used indirectly by producing more electricity, which that electricity is then used to heat my house, heat my water, cook my food. The difference there, though, is when directly used, it's almost 100% efficient, and when it's indirectly used, I'll even give a credit, it could be more than 40% efficient, but it's more like high 30s efficient. So some level, it takes 2 to 3 times the amount of energy when producing electricity. Does the industry tend to take a position on the direct use versus the indirect use?
You know, I don't think we have. I think we're as a midstream industry, we're pretty agnostic of where the fuels go. You know, we're just the transporter, and you know, the end consumers make those choice. But I guess I have enough of a technical background. It just doesn't make sense to me to add that much inefficiency to the energy infrastructure to convert something that you're basically going to burn natural gas to create electricity, and then you're going to move the electricity and you have the line losses and things that go with transporting electricity. And then you have the other losses to convert that electricity to heat, which is not a real efficient way to make heat. So again, you're making heat to make electricity, and then you move the electricity to make heat again. I think that kind of goes to your 30-40% efficiency number. It just doesn't seem to be the right way to generate heat.
You know, my saying is the energy complex is, in fact, so complex. But I find, as you said correctly, you can't get it in a 5-second soundbite. But the two concepts that are never, ever discussed is, one is conservation. And we've seen a little bit of that now with Russia invading Ukraine, as Germany begins to even say, hey, if we would turn our thermostats down 5 degrees, it would make a huge difference. But secondly, this indirect consumption could in fact increase our natural gas demand almost twofold. And that might be good for people who produce natural gas, but I think that kind of demand is not even something they want right now. We're seeing that.
I think we all want to do the best thing, you know.
Right.
I think all of us want to make the best decisions and use our resources that we are blessed with as effectively as possible.
Yes, well said. So Joel, this is the fun part of the show. We get to have a little fun now. We're going to hand you a magic wand, and this is a special wand, right? You get one wish to change one climate change related item, and you have to do it in the next year. So when I hand you this wand, what is the one thing that you would use your magic wand to change, to benefit climate change for the next year?
I think my magic wand wish would bring all the right people together to have an open and unbiased debate about energy and climate without the political influences that we're all living under right now. I know that's a really big ask and probably a very idealistic one if we truly enforce the no politics rule. It seems like politics seems to color everything these days. Climate scientists seems to be to me as much politicians as they are scientists these days. So, but the group of experts I'd love to gather up and just do have that discussion without the term climate crisis hanging over them, because that pushes us more into short-term thinking rather than long-term thinking. The U.S. produces less than 15% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions, and actually we continue to get cleaner year by year as the rest of the world grows and uses more energy. So, you know, we only have one atmosphere. A ton of CO2 or greenhouse gas put in the atmosphere here counts the same as one put in around the world in the Far East or Russia or Africa. And it sure seems like we should be tackling the worst, the easiest things to remove, not trying to get the hardest ones that we've already been working on for decades to do. So it seems like we're really short-term focused, and we really should be looking at long-term. So one of the people we talked to as we started Let's Clear the Air was Dr. Scott Tinker at University of Texas at Austin. And, Scott talks about three fundamental things about energy: that it needs to be clean and reliable and cheap. And so, we need to be thinking in those terms. And I'll add another one now, is we've all learned over the last few months that security is also an important part of the energy and climate discussion. So there are trade-offs. And so it can't be all one thing and not something else. We've got to balance out the needs of climate and economics and reliability and security. And so that's my magic wand. That's a big one, Tucker. So I don't know if how much juice you really have in that magic wand of yours, but that would be my wish.
It's a big magic wand. And anytime you get to quote Scott Tinker, you get almost two extra points. I think Scott Tinker is certainly one of the great thinkers about this, and a balanced thinker, right? Representing science and research and technology, and grounded very, very well in the practicalities
and
the impracticalities of the solution.
And people. I think that's the one thing I like about Scott, is he's been around the world and seen people all over the world in their particular situations. You know, we're blessed to live in the United States and have a lot different opportunities here than some of the places he's been. But energy touches us all in some way every day.
Well, a great use of your magic wand, and I appreciate the time you spent to even think about that response. All right, last fun thing we do, we created a virtual national forest. We call it the Propane National Forest, and it's a way of thanking all of our guests for being on Path to Zero. And I think you may be guest number 42, if I'm getting that close enough. I know you live in Texas. We have a couple of favorite forests in Texas, Davy Crockett National Forest, and then over in East Texas, the Sabine National Forest. Would you be willing for us to plant a tree in one of those two places? Or if you have a favorite forest, we'll let you pick it as well.
Oh, no, it's a unique place, Tucker. It's a combination of forest and swamp, and actually there's a lot of energy that comes from that area too. So natural gas and crude oil. So no, I'm happy to support the Sabine Natural Forest.
Well, our team is headed to East Texas to the Sabine National Forest to plant a tree there in your name and in honor of your time today. Joel, tell our listeners where they can learn more about Let's Clear the Air.
You can find our website at letsclearthenow.org. We have some videos up, we have some questions, we have information about midstream heroes. We're just getting started. So we're really looking forward to building the site, being a place where people can ask questions and have a dialogue about what's going on in midstream and climate. And so we welcome folks to check out our website and learn more about our campaign there.
What a great guest you've been. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tucker.
And to everyone else listening, see you next time on Path to Zero.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.